Ladies and gentlemen, please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing for a moment of silence. Thank you.
Mike, he's a baby face. He's not done.
Oh, no, I know he's not.
Oh, he's one big kid.
He's not going to turn 18 until he graduates. He's a September kid.
And he's
baby. Just thought he'd get on him.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for being here tonight. Ed, Danielle, good to see you guys. Thank you for coming tonight. Do we have any visitors? Gentlemen, any visitors? Oh, I have one. Susan. Would you please come to the table? Susan, you can sit down right there. Press the button in the front. The green light will come on, and you'll be on the microphone. Go ahead.
Okay. You want me to speak right now? Okay, I'm here to represent my son, Colby Hislop, who has been away for a year in Kids Peace. He has been a student in Sachem since preschool. Went to Gatelock, Grundy, Seneca, and then North. I'm having a bit of a problem. He's at Kids Peace in Pennsylvania, and it's imperative that he goes to...
Could you explain to everybody what Kids Peace is, please?
Kids Peace is a dual diagnosis facility for mental health issues and for substance abuse. They're recommending that he go to the community house, the Mildred School, the community house in Glen Cove. Unfortunately, Suffolk doesn't have a dual diagnosis place, so that would be the only one for him to go to. I've sent letters to you. I don't know if you received them. I've sent them to everybody, actually. My son needs a dual diagnosis. Sachem School District has consistently rejected any of my requests for assistance, even though the law mandates that all children are entitled to a safe learning environment. My son didn't have a safe learning environment. My son overdosed twice in Sachem High School. Once he was put on a bus, I was never called from an administrator. When he came off the bus and he fell at my neighbor's yard, that's when I realized that he was totally intoxicated, and I brought him to the hospital. Another time, the nurse called me at North and explained to me that my son was a little sleepy. Ended up putting him in a car, taking him to Matha, which I stood there till 9 o'clock at night from 9 o'clock in the morning, also an overdose. I've asked Sachem. I've tried to work with Sachem High School. I made many meetings. I tried to nip his... you have a very strict, according to the conduct, the rules of conduct, the code of conduct, for reporting absentees. He had a lot of illegal absentees. No one ever told me about them. I told the school about them. I mean, here's a child with an IEP who has many, many problems. He had two lunch periods. Why? I had to fight to get him a reading class instead of two lunch periods, because he was going out constantly. My son also fears for the safety in Sachem School District. During his past behaviors, while on drugs on the school grounds, he owes money to unsavory students who have threatened him numerous times. Every time Colby was placed in a facility, which at the CSE, they suggested that he go to Matha partial placement, which is basically for mental health and anger issues. My son did go there, but he was asked to leave because of drugs. Kids Peace is recommending a facility as a contingency to their current treatment. It's when they go into this facility, the Glen Cove Community House, they start off on restriction. It's not that they go in and they get things taken away. They don't have anything. They have to earn everything that they get. It's a very structured area. My son's been in placement for 10 months in a place that's totally structured. To put him in from going totally structured into a BOCES program that doesn't have any backup as far as drugs, I don't see my son making it. I know that it costs money to take my son from my house down to this place, but when are we going to stop passing the buck and start investing in these children? I mean, I'm afraid for my child's life if he doesn't have the structure that he needs. To go from no structure, from total structure into none, I see failure. I see failure. Kids' PCs failure. When I did go to the CSE meeting, I let them know my intentions and let them know Kids Peace intention. No one even checked out Community House. Why? They just said no. They know nothing about Community House. I mean, we invest in children from when they're little. We have all those DARE programs, everything. Once they get to high school, we don't invest anymore. We just let them go. I mean, my son used to get on the bus. I used to put him on the bus. He was sober. I don't have liquor in my home. Drugs, I don't have them. I dump them. Anything that I had to take, I would dump. He wouldn't even come home. And when he did, he was intoxicated. I mean, where is he getting them from? I need this child to go to Community House. That's what he needs. I don't want to bury him. I don't want him to end up in jail. He needs this. And I'm begging that someone will find it in their heart to invest in my child and give him what he needs, the support that he needs from this community. Because you know as well as I do, parents don't raise a child. The community raises a child. And that's all I'm asking. And any information that you need, I have documentation of the two times he overdosed when he came here to school. I have documentation in eighth grade. Went up to school. I went up to school. Told him to empty his pockets. Emptied his pockets. Principal left the room. Principal came back into the room, okay? Looks at his desk. He goes, do you want me to see what's on that desk? I said, do I want you to see what's on that desk? It was a bag of weed. I said, I want you to call the cops. My son knows better. I taught him better. He needs this place. And as far as I'm concerned, up until now, Sachem has failed him, and Sachem owes him a chance at a decent life.
Thank you.
And that's all I'm asking you.
Thank you. Okay. Action items. Carol, do you want to do the honors?
Establishment of a special meeting to vote on the BOCES.
I can't hear you, please.
Establishment of a special meeting to vote on the BOCES administrative budget and the candidates.
Can I have a motion, please? Deborah, thank you. Second, Fred. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. 9-0.
Reimbursement for Internet service for former Board of Education member Ralph Stile.
Can I have a motion? Who's that? Douglas?
Second.
Dave, thank you. Question? Go ahead. Deborah?
Are we finally going to draw up policy with regards to these types of reimbursements, Dr. Murphy?
We are working on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions or discussions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carol, there's 8-1. 8-2. I'm sorry, John. I didn't see you.
Okay.
So it's 7-2.
Mike Palmera and John Siegel?
Correct.
Thank you.
John and myself. Item 3.
Item 3, approval of a resolution for legal services.
Motion, please. Thank you, Ron. Second. Fred, thank you. Any questions or comments? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of the CEQA resolution for proposed capital projects.
Can I have a motion, please? Who's that, Rob? Thank you, Rob. Dave, thank you. Any questions? Discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of emergency repair roof work at Sachem High School East.
Douglas, thank you. Second. Fred Teneri. Any questions or discussion on this? John?
I know we all got the email from Dr. Murphy tonight regarding the condition of the building. And what are we going to do to stop this problem? I mean, we're fixing the roof, but apparently there's damage inside the building, and these are temporary repairs.
There's some other things, but let's specifically keep on the roof issue. And we have Guy Page here from H2M who could probably give us a little bit more detail on the roof situation. So, Guy, do you want to step up and try to give everyone an idea of what's happening on the roof?
Is it okay? Thank you. Thank you for having me here tonight. The east roof issue. Presently, H2M visited the roof site to determine the condition of the existing roof. We found over a couple days of reviewing the roof with representatives of Johns Manville, the manufacturer of the roof system. They were there with two technical people to review their conditions at various areas on the roof. They are presently preparing a report. I spoke to them earlier today, indicating that they would have a report for the district by the following Monday, based on their review and their findings of their of the condition of the roof system at this point. H2M's review, based on physically just walking the roof with a set of drawings that were used to construct that building, 2 weeks ago we were very concerned and we drafted a letter to the board indicating our concerns that certain sections of the roof presently as they exist are in near danger of complete failure. And what I mean by that is the membrane, it's a membrane system, it's called an EPDM roof system. That protective membrane presently with the winds that you have where that building is located, the winds when you have a heavy windstorm has been able to get underneath that membrane in certain areas and has been literally lifting that membrane away from the deck, the roof structure itself, to a point where it's torn in a couple of areas, I think early in December, and that roof was repaired at that time. But since then, since our investigation about a week and a half ago, we noticed other areas that are becoming compromised as far as the membrane is not fully adhered anymore to the structure below and really requires attention, immediate attention, in order to secure it. And what I mean is really secure it temporarily so that we can determine why the failures are occurring. I know Mansville, the manufacturer, is reviewing it based on what they've looked at it. What we'd recommend to the board is to further evaluate if we can work with the district's attorney to determine or really obtain some of the documents that we used, the specifications, the shop drawings, any field minutes that we used during the construction of that project would help us further evaluate how that system was built and how it was adhered to the deck and why those failures are occurring. Subsequent to that, we may recommend doing some additional probes, although the manufacturer did a couple small probes while they were doing their evaluation. We would recommend doing additional probes to help us review and really examine what's really going on under that roof system. As it stands now, it seems like it's becoming an issue where it could extend itself further beyond if it's not addressed in the short term. And then really at this point, based on our recommendation to evaluate the documents as well as doing some additional probes, along with the manufacturer, the next step would be really to evaluate what needs to be done long term to address that roof situation in the areas that we've seen damaged. So at this point, that's where it presently stands.
Okay. Guy, I know you aren't at the building today, but I know that, you know, John Alexak and I had some extensive conversations with Mike Bergen, but even the temporary patches that just were done a few days ago are now, I think, have been compromised again.
Is this
correct, Mike? Mike, is that
correct? No,
the temporary.
I think the area that was repaired last week was really to really secure that membrane that was loose on the north side of the gymnasium area. The area I think you might be mentioning, because I did speak to Mike earlier, that there was another leak over the auditorium stage.
Yeah, that was it.
And I think that area was repaired. That's the area that was repaired in December by the same contractor, and we really need to get him back there to reevaluate what he's done in that area. It was a large area that was opened up at that time. So I agree, we would have to have him take another look at that area. As of last week, I was unaware that it was an issue in that area still, but it's...
No, it's just today, I think.
Okay, with the rains that we had.
Tony, you have a question?
Yeah, I would first like to ask our attorney, Marianne, would it be appropriate to ask questions regarding the roof at this point in open session?
Yes.
Okay. You've mentioned two things. You've mentioned the membrane failure.
Correct.
Caused by something else. The wind.
Correct.
Okay.
I think the wind is really accelerating the condition of that membrane, not really doing its job of remaining in place, adhered to the deck.
Well,
I think the wind is really just speeding up the process of...
Well, then are you saying that there was failure in the membrane and the wind is exasperating it, making it worse? Or is it the wind causing the failure to the membrane?
I really couldn't tell you at this time exactly. I know the wind is definitely accelerating it.
Yeah.
Whether the wind is the only cause, I'm not sure. We'd have to look at the documents to see.
Are you going to go back up there and take a look at it?
Correct, yes.
I would like to get, there's two issues here. That place, as you say, is almost the highest place on Long Island.
Correct.
The wind is very heavy up there. Is that the proper roof membrane for that building, for that condition? I don't know. That's something an architect could tell us.
Yes, so, I think with further evaluation of the existing documents and to determine what system was actually put up there,
right.
I did have some discussions with the manufacturer. I think he's a little leery at this point to explain exactly what he thinks is really the problem. I think that's why he's preparing his report.
Well, John Mansville is going to cover the membrane, I'm assuming is what I heard. They're going to cover the damage that's...
I think up till the repair in December, I think they covered the repairs.
Yeah.
I think my understanding, verbally talking with them, I don't think they're looking to cover any additional costs going forward.
Then I would like a further report back from the architect when he goes back up there to not only look at the membrane, but maybe the causes of what's causing that problem, if it's an architectural failure or whatever it is, so we can get, we can find out what's causing that.
Once the architect, Guy Page, is able to identify that and come up with a solution along with John Mansell, the emergency repair has to take place. How it's paid in the end is something we'll have to work out with the attorneys.
Dr. Moore, my concern is patching a defective thing is not going to work. It may work for 5 years. What happens in 8 years or 10 years when that thing may come right off the top of that building? We don't know. And there's only so much that Manville's going to pay for. And for future boards and for future the community, we may wind up having to replace the whole roof. So I'd like to know something, how that roof's going to last in the next, I understand the patching. I understand it has to be fixed. But I want to know what's going to happen in 5 to 10 years. That building's a brand-new building.
No, I agree. I think Dr. Murphy mentioned.
That's what we're trying to say is the resolution here is to try to address the problem. And if there are some who's going to pay for it. That's why we have Mary Ann here. And I think, Mary Ann, you had something to add right now?
I just wanted to respond to Mr. Falco for a moment. The resolution that you have before you is simply to temporarily repair it. It's not a long-term fix.
Again, Mary Ann, I'm not against the resolution. I'm certainly for repair.
No, I understand. Yeah. I'm just trying to give you the chronology of what will occur. So that's the first step, so that because you have an obligation to mitigate your damages also if there is a claim as against somebody else. Johns Manville is doing its review and evaluation of the cause for this, and they're going to come back and issue a report, I think Mr. Page said, by Monday.
Next couple of days, was it?
Oh, I think a week from Monday.
A week from Monday. Right. And at the same time, H2M is prepared to go back and review the documents and come up with its conclusion as to why the roof is failing. But there is a chronology, and this is the first step, which is being done parallel to the evaluation that needs to occur to figure out why this is happening.
And just my last question. Dr. Murphy, we are keeping records of if any damage is done inside the building, which is caused by the rain?
We are.
Okay, thank you.
Michael, you had a question.
Guy, you've built a lot of schools on Long Island. Mm-hmm. Have you used Mansfield?
Yes.
As your roofer?
Yes.
Have you had similar problems?
Similar problems. Well, one issue, at the same time when this roof, I believe the issue of this roof happened when that one repair needed to be done in December was the 2nd of December. The only issue I've had with Mansfield is we had another roof going on, another school district just north of you, but that was under construction at the time. And what happened at that location, a section of that roof did blow off. It was a Mansfield roof. However, in that situation, it was in construction. The copings weren't on, so it was temporarily secured during the construction period. So that portion came up. But I've never had an issue with Mansfield similar to what you're having now when the roof was completed and in place.
You've used them more than just?
Correct, yes. We've used several different manufacturers.
Any other questions from the board? So, Guy, I guess the determination is it a material failure or an installation situation? Is that what we're looking at here?
Yeah, I think it's. I think in the end, I think you're gonna find some of it's installation related and system design related.
Well, your architect should have known it was going to be windy up there. I mean, you know, it's the one of the highest points on Long Island, so. Okay, so what we're looking at right now, folks, what's on the floor right now is an emergency roof repair, so we don't have further damages. John, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Guy, I had a question. Now, if it turns out that it's not Mansfield and it's a structural item, I mean, are we talking about replacing the entire roof of East, you know, from the structural membranes up?
I'm not sure what you mean. If it's a structural,
well, if it's not the rubber roof itself, if it's an architectural problem, it wasn't designed properly. Are we talking about rebuilding the roof of East?
I think you're probably talking about major sections of East. I think there are some areas of the roof where you have small sections that have parapets, walls extending above the roof plane. You do have some areas of those that condition, and based on our visual walk of those areas. The roof seems to be intact, and the wind is not taking any severe damage to those areas. So there may be areas that, you know, depending at the end of the day, may not need to be replaced completely. But there are going to be major areas that I think you're going to find potentially that need to be replaced. Correct.
Now you say major areas. I mean, I'm translating that into major dollars.
Correct.
You know, large dollars that we're going to have to absorb. You know, we just spent millions of dollars on these schools. I mean, where's it going to stop? I mean, it has to stop somewhere. These buildings are falling apart.
Well, I think we need to take the next step and evaluate it further before we can make that conclusion, but we may end up at that point.
Any other questions? Thank you, Guy. Deborah, you had a question.
When will you be done with your evaluation, and I guess you'll be conferring with Mansfield, is that his name, Mansfield?
John Mansfield.
Mansfield at the same time?
Yes. What I'd like to do is I set up successive meetings from today, really trying to obtain some of the documentation that the district has with the legal counsel to really start evaluating what information is available. The the difficult part of reevaluating the roofs is the original architect is not available. The roofing contractor, I think, is out of business, but the general contract, so it's an issue where we're going to have to come in and evaluate the information that's available, and we're going to try to be doing that in the next couple weeks, and hopefully shortly after Mansfield's report is issued, there's a couple steps that I may have to take as far as doing maybe some probes into the roof to physically look at the construction of that system. Right now, a visual walkthrough is only giving us that surface evaluation. To properly evaluate it may require some additional work.
And then, so that'll probably take about another month, you think?
I would say between 2 to 4 weeks.
To 4 weeks. And then how soon can you start repair? Or how soon can we start repair?
Well, I think the first step was really to take care of the emergency issues that we see as we're evaluating the roof at this time. Depending on what the outcome of our findings, we'll be able to project what the extents of the repairs will be needed long term. But the approach is really to evaluate it so that we could properly repair it so that it does last the full term that it's expected to last. Typically, a roof of this type should last 20 years.
This is a simultaneous kind of thing. I mean, you're going to talk about the short-term repair, and you're going to tell us what we're going to have to do for the long term.
It may be repaired in a short period that will last that long term. That's what we're looking for. But first, we have to deal with the emergency issue today, and then going forward in the next several weeks, evaluate first, further determine what the causes are and what the best solution to solving that problem.
Are we going to be using this Mansfield again?
We're in the evaluation stage. We may at the end of the day recommend a different manufacturer and a different system.
I think that sounds like a good idea.
Thank you. Anyone else have a question? Tony?
Just a question for Dr. Murphy. With this problem, has there been any major distraction in the school day for any of the classes?
I would put that question to Mr. Lexak, who's Sagem High School's principal back there.
I know, Mr. Papa, the area is a question of the ceiling, and for the most part, the leakage that we have in the roof is over the auditorium, and we've been able to, the stage portion of the auditorium, so we've been able to make do in terms of parts and trying to prevent further stage damage. But in terms of the construction component, which is in the A wing, there's limited water damage to the building, but it is not the construction part.
What about electrical damage? I mean, water can find its electrical box as easily as anything else. Have we looked in?
There's an area in the B portion of the building where we actually have water coming in between the doorway into a HVAC room. And I have, we'll be getting some images on that probably for the next couple of days. I've prepared a CD for Dr. Murphy, which has all the images from today in terms of the areas where you have water entering into the building, either through the roof, through doorways, and so on. So you'll have all the information.
Okay. And then just my only concern is during the school day, if we have a major shortage in electricity, then we could knock the whole building out very easily. So, I mean, you're looking into that to make sure that there's no water, I know you can't always see where it's going, but your major electrical areas, I'm sure you're keeping an eye on that so nothing gets into that electrical box.
There's one, John, right?
There's, we have one area in the building which is off of the little theater. It's not instructional, it's an HVAC room. We have all of the ducting for the B portion of the wing. There's actually water that's been coming in beneath the doorway. The entryway is pitched down into the doorway where it's rained, that obviously can't accommodate the water flow. We measured the high mark against the door 15 inches. Today's water high was 7.5 inches. All that water came in under the doorway and flooded out an area that has HVAC units, as well as a conduit that's through there also.
Okay.
There was an inch of standing water in that area.
You're aware of that, and you're looking into that, though.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, Deborah, go ahead.
The roof, it can't collapse, can it?
It's a steel
deck. Yeah, no. It's actually a concrete deck on a metal. It's a metal pan with a concrete poured deck. So I don't see any issues with the structure itself at this time.
Any other questions? All right, at this point, I'm sorry, Rob, go ahead.
You said the roof is compromised in a couple of areas, okay? How many different areas is it compromised in? And is it pretty much in one area of the school, or is it spread out?
It's mainly focused on the areas of the gymnasium and auditorium, and mainly I think the reason for that is it's the larger roof planes where I think the wind has been able to find its way through and affect those large areas. So it's really those two areas, the auditorium and the gymnasium, and there is a section of the corridor spine, if you will, of the building. There is a small area that we've noticed some of the membrane loosening up a little bit, but those are the main areas, really the large two areas.
This temporary fix, is it going to last long enough for us to get through this problem with Mansville and whether or not they're going to do a permanent repair? Or
I believe, yes, as far as it, preventing that membrane from lifting off that roof, what they're doing is securing it at this point. And that will last, I believe, in a sufficient amount of time until we can address it for a long-term solution.
And you said there's one area where the roof is not coming up, and you have partitions, raised partitions. Does that seem to be helping with the wind?
Yes. Based on our visual observations, yes.
Okay, thank you, Guy. What we have on the floor right now, we have a motion on the floor.
I just wanted
to
just say two things, Mike.
Go ahead.
One is with Guy Page, just so everyone understands, Guy Page is the new architect who's working with a number of our capital projects around the district. He was not the designer of this roofing system. I just want to make sure everyone understands that, and he's been really helping us out in the situation and been very available to us. And two, I know John Siegel raised a question about some other things happening in the building. There are some other issues in the building, and Mr. Lexak, the facilities plan manager, Mike Bergen, and the building custodians and chiefs are coming up and identifying the different areas that we're having some difficulties with, and we'll be sharing that with the board, and eventually there'll be some future discussions at some board meetings about these areas as well. But I really appreciate your help, Guy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Guy, for your time. The motion on the floor is for the emergency repair. All in favor, please.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of an agreement between Sachem Central School District and Hilton, Long Island for the Sachem North Senior Prom.
Can I have a motion, please? Who is that? Dave? Thank you. Second by Douglas. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Go ahead.
'08
and '07. A contract for 2 years. Okay, one at a time. First, we have a motion on the floor. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Next.
Approval and agreement between the Sachem Central School District and Islandia Marriott for the Sachem North Senior Prom on 08.
That was John Siegel, second by Douglas Duncan. All in favor?
Aye.
Any questions on this one? No? Okay, good. Thank you. Okay, presentations and discussions, mid-year graduation and commencement. Charlie, who's going to handle this?
Yeah, we have Jim Nolan, Sachem High School North principals, and John Alexak are both here to talk about mid-year graduation commencement, and Paul Kopp is going to help lead the discussion about this ceremony.
Jim Nolan and
John Alexak.
And John Alexak.
Taking some time to be here tonight.
Thank you, Charlie. Mr. Scavo, just a point of clarification on the prom. Normally, we do approve a year in advance, but with the situation with the Huntington Downtown, so we had to make a change for this year's prom. That's why we had the 07 and 08 being approved. This discussion, just I know Dr. Murphy has – I'm sorry.
Well, what happened with the Hilton? I mean, Jim could talk about this. This year we had the Huntington Townhouse. That place folded, and the emergency one was really to get the Hilton. And after they got the Hilton, then they went out and they started searching for what's really the best place for the best price, and I think that's why they went to the Marriott after that. But it's a challenge because these things do fold, and we're not the only people that's ever happened to it, and they scrambled, and Maureen Brush and Jim did a
really nice job of securing this new location.
Related to the mid-year graduation, I know Dr. Murphy had previously sent each of the board members his recommendation. This is really an item that we've discussed the last few years. Since the reconfiguration and the move to the two 9-12 high schools, as you know, we do run, obviously, two separate graduations in June of over 600 students. And since that time, we've been running our mid-year commencement as a combined ceremony, alternating in locations each year between North and East. This past year's ceremony was at Sachem North. Basically, what we have at this point is we're running a ceremony for typically 40 to 50 students, and the costs associated with the graduation are generally in the area of $3,000 for what amounts to a 40-minute ceremony, plus the countless man hours that go into planning an event, you know, even on such a small scale. Right now, the recommendation that we are making to the board is that we move away from having a mid-year commencement. This is consistent with what we found out from some other districts. I know Mr. Nolan had put something out on a listserv to high school principals, and really there aren't any districts that are doing this kind of a ceremony. But the one thing that we wanted to point out in this recommendation is that students who meet their graduation requirements either in January or in August would still be eligible to participate in the June graduation. The thought being that if a student came up a few credits short in June and could still meet their requirements through that subsequent summer school, those students would still be eligible to participate in the ceremony so that they did still have a high school graduation. A student who was a little further away and wouldn't make their total number of credits necessary for graduation until January would certainly be eligible to participate in the subsequent June graduation, which is really what we allow for our January graduates in terms of other senior activities. We've had from time to time students graduate in January who have asked and certainly been allowed to participate in the senior trip, senior prom, and so forth. I asked Mr. Lexak, Mr. Nolan, to be here tonight really just to field your questions. Obviously, you've all participated in these ceremonies, and you know, you've seen what they're like and so forth. But at this point, our recommendation is, you know, based on the cost factors and generally the decreasing number of students that are involved each and every year, this may be the time to look at moving away from having such a ceremony. But just really wanted to answer any questions that you might have.
Tony, go ahead.
Yeah, can you give us a sense of the percentage early graduations rather than late, meaning who gets there? There are some that graduate early. Can you give a nice sense of what percentage approximately?
Tony, just to give you an idea, this year the total number between North and East was under 50. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, at North we had 21 January grads and 2 August grads, for a total of 23 students.
Right.
So that's roughly the percentage. Well, the January grads, most of the January grads are early. But most of the January grads are also not college-bound. They're students who are moving on to the workforce and things of that nature.
Did you get a sense, or have you a sense, of how the students would feel that, you know, maybe early graduate, they may not come back for the they graduate in January early, they'll have to wait till June to go to the graduation. Is there a sense from the kids itself how it would affect them?
Yeah, you know what? We really have surveyed the kids over the years, and I have to say from year to year it varies. You know, it depends on the group. Some kids will ask you, even I can remember off the top of my head, they were sisters, they were twins, and one wanted to graduate in January, and one wasn't going to graduate in June until June. And for mom's sake, I said to the one, why don't you come back in June and be part of the celebration with your sister? And she just really wanted to get on with her life and go in a different direction. So I would say from year to year, it's really different if you were to survey the kids.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
The number of early graduates has really declined over the years. I mean, Tony, you'll remember having been involved with these ceremonies, you know, for years, that there was a time when we would graduate quite a few in January. But the requirements for graduation have become that much more stringent that, you know, very few students really can get out early, and very few choose to try to get out early.
The only thing is, my sense is that the early graduates, and again, it's just a sense, they probably will not come back in June. Usually when they get their lives started after January, they're on their way. So I just wondered how they felt, you know, although it's a small ceremony and it's, you know, it's quick, you know, we do it in an hour sometimes, and I just wondered how they would feel about, you know, not being handed a diploma like they normally would be. But thank you.
Anyone else? Douglas, and then Douglas, and then Rob. Go ahead, Doug.
Well, I don't have a problem with this recommendation. Any major university or college, if you graduate after the fall semester, you have to wait to come back until June to graduate with the rest of the people. So I don't see why we should be any different. And, you know, to me, I was at the graduation this year. I certainly don't think the amount of money we're spending for just doing a few kids, you know, I don't think it makes sense for us. I think the kids that truly want to be there for graduation, truly want to take part in the ceremony, I think they will come back in June. And the kids that don't want to be there, that are just being put through the motions, and they won't come back, but, you know, that'll be their loss. So that's just what I think.
Rob?
How many students graduate from East? I know 23 graduated from.
We had approximately the same number. It was mid-20s, I believe it was this year. And a good number of those, in terms of January graduates, you really have two groups of students. You have some students who are graduating beyond August of the previous year. So they're, in effect, coming back for a half of a fifth year. And then you have some students who are graduating half a year ahead of their class. Within that breakdown, more of the students that we have from East who are graduating in January are coming in to finish the first half of a fifth year. A smaller percentage this year were students who were actually graduating a half a year ahead of their classmates. And those who are typically attending classes at Suffolk, which begins a week ahead of time. So to answer also the other question, Mr. Falco, that you asked, the students who are graduating a half a year early ahead of their classmates typically are not going to come back because they've already had college time behind them, they have work experience behind them, and they've really moved much further along in their life's journey than students who are just completing their graduation requirements at the end of June.
Now, a lot of these kids, though, are kids that are in classes together. A lot of them know each other. I'm going to be honest, I was at the last commencement. I thought it was well attended. I thought the kids were really excited about it. I teach high school. I teach 11th and 12th grade. I have students that do graduate, meet the requirements in January, okay, and they leave us. And come June, they don't come back. So if my take on this is that $3,000 is really not a lot of money when you're talking about a $266 or $274 million budget. This may be the only graduation that these kids get, you know. And to me, to spend an hour, you know, I don't know if I would be in favor of taking that away from them.
It's more than an hour. When it comes to the planning of pulling off the night, It's a lot more time with what the staff puts in when the programs and all those other things going on. And I know that, you know, Paul, Jim, and John were very nice not to touch upon what the atmosphere was like this year. And that's what really turned me to say, you know, I think this is about run its course, because the atmosphere was really abysmal that night. And it was bad the year before and bad the year before that, but this year was just about an uncontrollable audience. And I think if this audience is in with the big group, that they're going to see more of a modeled behavior of how a crowd is supposed to be rather than what took place in January. And it was bad.
A lot of kids in the audience are kids that are going to be graduating in June, friends of the January graduate.
I don't know if it was. I couldn't even blame it on the kids. You know. I don't know, Jim, you would.
Yeah, I would have to agree with Dr. Murphy. My experience is, you know, I'll defend the kids to the end. I mean, I tell people all the time, kids have never disappointed me or let me down. You know, you look at the kids that were on the stage, model behavior.
Yeah.
And my feeling is that the inappropriate behavior did not come from children.
It came from parents.
Anyone else? Deborah?
I'm inclined to agree with Rob. I mean, I really do have a concern about that. I do understand that there were some unruly parents that evening. But again, do we deny the children the right to have a graduation ceremony? because a few parents wanted to, you know, shout out hoopla and, you know, just have a good time that evening. I don't know. I just don't know if that's worth denying the child just the opportunity to get up on stage and shake the hand of Dr. Murphy and the principal and receive their diploma. It's a very important day. And I'm not sure that, you know, saving the $3,000, I mean, it's not even a money issue here. It's, you know, it's just what the right thing to do is, what, you know, what the children should expect from all their years of hard work at Sachem High Schools. And I think that's a very important thing. Jim, you've been in more graduations than I can shake a stick at. but so you understand where I'm coming from.
Sure.
So to eliminate the mid-year commencement, I'm just not sure that we should move in that direction yet. I think we should try to maybe keep the crowd under control if we could possibly do that instead of taking it away.
You know, I agree. I don't really look at it as a money issue. I look at it, I mean, basically, at least in my time at Sachem, the graduation numbers for mid-year graduation have dwindled greatly. I mean, I can remember when it was about 80. And now, you know, it's one of the events that we still hold together between North and East, really because of the numbers. I mean, we certainly don't. Well, I think because of what Mr. Kopp was saying, I think the numbers will continue to decline because of the graduation requirements and things of that nature. You know, when students enter their senior year, they either have a schedule for themselves where graduation is a possibility, or if at that point they're deficient in so many credits, then they know at that point then they have to come back and graduate. But I don't really see the numbers going up.
Thank you. How about Danielle and Ed? You guys want to weigh in on this, being that you're both seniors, class presidents? Figure I'd put you on the spot.
We love that.
Yeah, I know you love that. Who's going first?
Ed? Personally, for me, I definitely understand where Dr. Murphy and both Mr. Nolan and Mr. Alexak are coming from, because as Ms. Linkowski was saying, we're not necessarily denying them the opportunity to have that kind of a day to celebrate your graduation, because at least my understanding is that they're still more than welcome to come back for the June ceremony, and whether or not they come back is really a choice for themselves and their families. And so it's not necessarily that we're denying them the opportunity to have that day. It's just that it's at a later date and time.
Thank you. Danielle?
I also agree. My sister was an early graduate. She got her credits done early, so she was able to, like you said, start her life early. She went to college early and everything. But so I definitely support having an early graduation opportunity for students who are ahead and or for any reason that they're graduating at that time. But like you said, if the numbers are decreasing because of the requirements, then because of the time and effort, like me and Ed know, like the time and effort that's put into events that even something like March Madness or the pep rally, which may seem like not such large events, but it's a lot of hours. It's not just the money that we put into it. So I would understand where you guys are coming from and saying that you'd like to stop it. Yes, I do. I would agree with it because I understand where you guys are coming from.
Thank you. Douglas, you have something else?
Yeah, I just want to touch upon what Dr. Murphy had said also. I was at January graduation this year, and I think we also have to keep in consideration the kids that are at January graduation. You know, the atmosphere he talked about, it was a rowdy atmosphere, and I won't, you know, hide my words. It was a rowdy atmosphere, and I think we have to give those kids on stage that respect. And I think, like Dr. Murphy said, if we go to June, those rowdy parents are going to be drowned out, and they're going to look around and say, well, I really can't be like this here. And those kids are going to be given the respect that they deserve. You know, I was on that stage. I was embarrassed for some of those kids based on the way their parents were acting. And I don't think that anyone should have a ceremony like that and have to go through that. If that was my graduation, I would have been embarrassed, and that's something I wouldn't have forgotten. So, you know, it's just more from me. Thank you.
Anyone else want to weigh in on this? Okay, you know what we'll do? Let's take Eleni, and we'll give you some kind of direction with this. John? John?
Yes, I agree with Dr. Murphy's recommendation.
So you're agreeing not to have it?
That's correct.
Douglas?
Yes.
Not to have it?
Not to have it.
Tony?
Not to have it. Not to have it. Not to have it.
No. I'm sorry. No, you don't have to. It's okay. Rob? That's, what do we have? We have five already. I'll tell you the truth. When this came up 2 years ago, I was against not having it simply because, I really wanted the kids to have the ceremony. But if the numbers have dwindled as much, and, you know, for me to talk is really not, you know, it's kind of hypocritical because that's, I think I've missed two of the last three. You know, I'm out of town that time of year. And so, you know, for me to even weigh in on this is kind of, not the right thing to do. But my concern is the same as the folks to my left, that, these kids are not going to have anything at all. And, you know, this group of parents doesn't necessarily mean that the other groups of parents of kids coming through are going to be the same way. So, but I will acquiesce to the majority of the board and say, no, let's discontinue it.
Thanks, Jim, John, Paul, for coming out tonight.
Elementary health curriculum. Who's stepping up for this?
Jill wants to present with the new health curriculum that she's going to recommend to the board. Have a little bit of a discussion on it.
A few months back, I had spoken a little bit about the elementary health curriculum as part of the elementary vision, and at that time, when we were taking a look at the elementary curriculum overall, the health curriculum hasn't been updated in over 10 years, at least in the grades for K through 4, and as a result, we started to explore some of the other programs that are available. The Health Smart program, which you're receiving a copy of the K through 5 curriculum, is a program offered through Suffolk County. It's a program designed for children in grades K through 12, and it responds to the challenges facing our children today. Our goal in utilizing this curriculum, particularly in grades K through 5, is to lay the foundation early on for making healthy choices in early childhood, adolescence, and throughout our students' adult lives. We want to foster healthy attitudes and behaviors, and even more importantly, prepare children to learn and succeed in school by creating healthy minds, confidence, and support for one another. This particular curriculum, Health Smart, was designed by a team of educators. It is actually being funded by the County of Suffolk through the Suffolk County Health Department. When I say it's being funded through the Suffolk County Health Department, the federal government received over $250 billion in lawsuit monies through the tobacco industry. Therefore, that funneled down to the state, and the state funnels that to the county. Suffolk County was awarded $20 million each year for the next 20 years to provide prevention programs for the community. And as a result, school districts have been afforded the opportunity of a health curriculum. And this is the Suffolk County health curriculum, the one they've chosen to support that program. So it really is in our best interest to take advantage of the program. Not only do they provide all the materials for the teachers and the students, but they'll provide the staff development. We are looking to have our teachers trained in the health program throughout the summer. They will pay our teachers to attend the training so that they're not out of the classroom throughout the school year. But overall, the program covers a focus on six areas of health behavior as identified by the U.S. Center of Disease Control and Prevention as having the greatest effect on adolescent morbidity and mortality. These behaviors that result in unintentional or intentional injury, tobacco use, alcohol and other drug use, dietary patterns that contribute to disease, and insufficient physical activity. The program addresses in a step-by-step manner the National Health Education Standards for Health Literacy. Many of the learning activities are designed to help students develop health-related skills, implement actions to achieve good health, celebrate healthy choices, have the students take pride in the choices they make, and also advocate for the support of healthy choices of their peers and families. The elementary curriculum at the K to 5 level has four units of study, as outlined in the packet that I've given you. The four units are personal and family health, safety and injury prevention, nutrition and physical activity, and tobacco and alcohol prevention. Each of the lessons is approximately 30 minutes long. The materials that the teacher receives is some background information with related to the health topics covered, teacher guides, flip charts, very colorful posters to refer to in the classroom. There's even a family component that provides activities for a family table talk around the dinner table, some discussions on items such as Got a Minute, and some family letters that can go home to share what was being discussed in the classroom. Our plan here in Sachem is to have the representative from HealthSmart from the county, and they work alongside BOCES to come in to our April faculty meetings at each elementary school and speak to the staff. We sent one teacher from each elementary school to just get some background information about the program and attend one of the trainings. All of those 12 teachers, which doesn't always happen, came back, and the program was overwhelmingly positively received. It is so much better than what we have now, but it's very easy to implement. The materials are kid-friendly, and the topics really align with our goals here in the Sachem District. So the HealthSmart representative will come and speak to the entire staff, as well as that staff member from the building, to share input from what they learned at the training that day. We'll receive the materials prior to the end of this school year so that the teachers can become familiar with it over the summer. We'll send the teachers to summer training. I'm working with the developer right now to set up numerous opportunities for teachers, not just, you know, August 3rd. We'll have several chances for them to participate over the summer. Anybody who chooses not to participate over the summer, we will have them trained in September, and then we will start implementing the program this September. We did purchase some textbooks a number of years back for grades 4 and 5. We will look to continue to utilize those textbooks so that they don't go to waste and continue to supplement this particular curriculum in grades 4 and 5. We wrote a curriculum for grade 5 approximately 3 or 4 years ago. It never got down to the K through 4 level. So we're going to look to combine the curriculum that was written for 5th along with the HealthSmart curriculum. They really align right now, but some things can be tweaked, and we want the kids to be able to utilize the textbook in grade 5 as well. And then we'll reevaluate back actually in January of 2008 to see how this is working. Presently in the district, Lori Hewlett, the department chair for health education, has become familiar with the HealthSmart program as we've used components of it at the middle school and high school level, but not the full curriculum at the secondary level. But what you have in front of you is the K through 5. Those are the units of study and what's covered in the four units. Does anybody have any questions?
Yes. Tony and then Doug.
Yeah, Jill, a question. I see on one of the targets that you said that they, one of the points was insufficient physical activity. I think you mentioned that. I see on in one of the paragraphs here, it says nutrition and physical activity. Where does it address physical activity in here that I don't see it?
You know what? I don't think I mentioned that. It's personal and family health, safety and injury prevention, nutrition and the physical activity. But that's one of the four units. If you go to the second page of your packet,
yeah,
For kindergarten, nutrition and physical activity.
Right.
That's mostly about healthy eating, you know, drinking water, and then it says using your body in different ways, setting a goal to move every day. So at the kindergarten level, you know, they'll talk about different exercises the kids can do, getting out, not sitting in front of the TV.
Well, they'll talk about it, but will anybody be pushing them out to do it? Is there any physical activity involved other than reading about it?
No, they're not really. There is not really physical activity as part of the health curriculum per se. I mean, that's covered in the phys ed classes, but some of the, you know, the handouts that go home, the pictures and things, especially at the kindergarten, will be for parents to get the kids out and off the couch.
Well, I understand that, you know, a lot of it has to do with parents getting the kids out, but today, you know, as you know, the parents, they're not out. They're usually home after school, and then they're sitting somewhere. And I've noticed, you know, I live right across the street from an elementary school, and I like to see the kids out there, even sometimes in cold weather, running around. That's a good thing, and I'm sure the teachers like to let the kids get, but it seems to me that a lot of these kids are not doing that, and do we have a program to make sure each of these children get some physical activity during the day? Is it not to do with health, more with physical education. The recess period, is there a choice for a teacher to have the children go outside or stay inside?
Yes, there is.
There is.
I mean,
so
we encourage all teachers to send kids out when the weather permits.
Right.
It is something that's discussed at all the elementary schools. We talk about a 40-degree limit, you know.
Right. I can understand weather, but it's really up to the teacher whether they want their children to be out
Some of the days, yes, I'm going to say that they will choose an inside recess activity. But I know the principals do encourage them to send the kids out where possible.
Maybe this discussion should be maybe when we discuss maybe the physical education part, you know, maybe that we can discuss that. But I certainly think we certainly have to get these kids moving a little more, not just reading about it, but getting them out there moving. You know, I think it's important because sometimes they get on the bus, go home, and then that's it.
I know you and I have spoken about it before as we visited some of the elementary schools and really talking about making the best use of time within the PE class and giving the kids more opportunities.
Right.
But, you know, that really is something that can be addressed within this curriculum where we really have the teachers demonstrate or, you know, not only talk about, but you know, say to the kids as a follow-up, what kind of physical activities did you do when you went home? We're going to need to take a look at this. And as with all curriculums, we do add different components to it, and that is something we can address.
Thank you, Jill.
Any other questions? Douglas, I'm sorry, you were.
Jill, you said about funding. Are we getting any flat grant money, or is it all associated with they're going to give us the documents, they're going to do the teacher training? So are we getting any sort of, like, for argument's sake, are we getting like $200,000 to be used for health?
No, the money is through materials and training. So no money is funneled through the district for this.
Okay. And is this something that you found when you were looking into this? Are a lot of other schools, other school districts starting to implement this?
A lot of other schools have been taking advantage of it for quite some time. Like I said, Sachem has taken advantage of components of it at the middle school and high school levels. But, I mean, you can look around from Connectquot to Bayport Blue Point to Miller Place and William Floyd. You know, we really weren't aware of it to this level.
Okay. Well, thank you for the research and thank you for the work. This seems like it's going in a good direction.
It would be about $200,000-something to purchase a program like this when we started to look at different health programs. So this is quite a bit of savings to the district and an opportunity we really should take advantage of.
All right. Well, thank you.
Rob? Thank you. Anyone else? Just a quick thing. Teachers who do not go to training over the summer. Now, what's the plan for them during the school year?
That we will implement training during the school year. It's a full day of training, so they will be out of the classroom for a full day, and the county will reimburse us for the subs.
For subs, okay.
But, you know, we are trying not to have the teachers miss student
this
time.
This is good. It looks like a good program, and it's long overdue, I'll tell you that. So I'm really happy that you're doing it. I like to think about family values and especially, you know, something near and dear to my heart. The youngsters are obese, and a lot of young kids have diabetes because of the way they eat and so on. So that's a major concern. So I think hopefully this will help address it. And I know they'll work in conjunction with the phys ed people as far as Tony's concerns with the the physical fitness piece of it.
When you look at the curriculum, there's a lot of components of it, especially at the K-2 level, really looking about kids and tobacco use, even at the kindergarten age, to be really proactive in some of the measures here.
It is. It's a good program. Thank you very much, Joe. It's too late, Doug. No, go ahead. I'm just kidding.
The kids would want me to ask this question. Since it's funded through Suffolk County, are there any field trips associated with this through Suffolk County or anything like that?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
I heard there was one to Tony's Pizza. No? All right. Thank you, Joe.
I'll start off. Some people in the audience may notice that Bruce Singer is not here tonight. His sons are.
I thought that was Bruce.
That's
Fred Canary.
No, that's Fred Canary. That's right. I saw your picture in the yearbook. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
His son's receiving an academic award down in James Madison today, so he's unable to make it. So we'll try to have a state aid discussion without him. But because of that, and Bruce being out of town, we did receive some information from the state, and they presented some additional state aid to the Sachem School District. The way the new state aid formula works is Ron and Bruce are still working at figuring out all the numbers, and we don't really have a firm grasp on what's coming into the district and what's not coming to the district, because they do give lines and they say that this is part of the formula or this is part of the formula, and not everything that has been added to the formula we actually get. And there's some instances with some supplemental public access costs or BOCES aid and building aid that is really subject to change and verification, and Ron and Bruce have been working on that, but Bruce being on vacation for the past week, we really haven't had a firm handle on it. But we will have some extra state aid. What we suggest that we do now, because the budget is coming up, we've approved the budget, but we can still we still have enough time before the vote to change a little bit of the numbers. So we're suggesting that we add $802,000 right now of some state revenues that we know that should be coming in, subject to verification, to the budget, so that we bring the budget down to a true zero for the community for next year. Right now we're at 0.5%, and $802,000 would give us a true zero. And then after Ron and Bruce have spent time with it, we'll know more about what we truly are going to receive for state aid for next year. I know that some people had made some suggestions out there, and I've fielded a couple of phone calls about evening up the contingent budget and the regular budget. But that's a board decision. But I would suggest right now we add in $102,000 to the revenue side to bring the regular proposed budget down to a true zero. But if somebody wanted to talk about the contingency side and raising that to just a true zero as well, we can do that.
Anyone want to weigh in on this? Go ahead, Tom.
I have a question. It's really not to do with the. It's just to do with. What about publications and out to the community? Are we going to have enough time to get this out?
We had the publication just about complete, and we told Z&E to put a hold on it right now, pending tonight's meeting. And again, there's a lot of people talk about the money that's coming in, and it is exciting, but we have to be very careful about this extra money that we are getting. I've read an awful lot, and I've shared a number of. The articles that I've read with the board, and this money is great, and it's like the lottery coming in such a way. But I don't know if the state, and what from what I've read, I don't know if the state is going to be able to sustain this in the future. And just one of the recent articles that I read from the Times and with Westchester School District. Now Westchester School Districts want as much as the Long Island School Districts, and when Westchester and Long Island get their fair share, I'm sure the upstate school districts are going to be crying foul as well. And so all this money is coming in, but we just don't seem to have the revenue sources from the state that's
really creating this money. So I don't know when it's going to end. So I would be very careful, and I've cautioned the board in some correspondence that we need to protect the future as well, because if this party ends quickly, you know, we could have a large tax spike in the future. And I'm more concerned about having a vision for proper budgeting over the long term rather than the short term. And it's easy to have a short term vision and just throw it all in. But if you have that long term vision, you're really protecting the community over a number of years and not just the short run. And that's just my feelings on it. And the example I gave the board, and I'll share this with the community, was a few years ago, pension costs and what the state was charging school district for pensions was extremely low. It was lower than the cost of inflation. It was to the point that we should have recognized that it was lower than it should have been. And then when the state finally corrected the pension costs for school districts and government municipalities, it took everyone by surprise, and we weren't ready for it. And you know, there was a tax spike that year. So in the same light, I would just caution everyone about this state aid being there forever, because if it goes down next year, there could be a large tax spike for many of the school districts that aren't looking toward the long term with their budgeting process and their cash management.
Ron, did you want to say something?
I've had extensive discussion with state aid planning. They are the experts in state aid. In conversation with their lead representative, she had expressed her wariness of this level of funding continuing in future years also.
You know, years ago they used to have what they called a safe harmless course. And this is really aging ourselves. Tony, you probably remember this too, where you always got the same amount of state aid as you never got less than you did the year before. Then the 80s came around, and we had that huge, huge drop-off in state aid, and that's when we were cutting people out. You know, we laid off, I don't know how many teachers. We had administrators that were in jeopardy. It was really a horrible time. The thing that scares me the most about this is where it says it's coming from undetermined sources. You know, so I don't know what that means. But I think we have to give something back to the taxpayers. People are seeing this, and that, you know, and it is a blessing. There's no two ways about it. But, you know, I think the way we're handling it is physically responsible. I would rather do as the superintendent had mentioned and be conservative, bring this down to a zero, put this money in, and then kind of, the other money, if the money comes in the way it's supposed to, you know, we're not going to lose it. It'll just go to offset, you know, next year's budget, and keep the budget low for as long as we can, you know, so we don't have to run into what we did 3 years ago with that 18% increase. Then we got down to, it ended up being like 11 or 12%. And we really don't want to have to go through that again. So I'd rather be cautious with this. And err on the side of caution. And if it comes through, and it comes through again, and it comes through again, then, you know, we can just keep doing more and more and giving more back. But until the red flag for me was the undetermined sources, and I don't know where that money comes from. And what Ronnie had just mentioned is basically what the feedback is up and around Albany, is that people are saying, wow, this is great, but it's... I don't know, you know. I think we're safe with the putting the money in and bringing this down to the $800,000+ and bringing this down to a zero budget. I think that's a responsible thing to do, and hopefully the amount of money we get will get it. You know, we'll know that for sure when we get it. And the thing I always remember, there was a gentleman who came in. I was interning back in the 70s, and a gentleman came in who was a businessman, and he came in and served as a business administrator for a couple of years, you know, just so we could, actually it was just a year, and he worked, and he was really a successful guy, bright as anything. His name was Eli Crute, and I remember him saying to me, if you ever had to run a business the way you run a school district, you'd be out of business in 6 months. you'd close your doors. There's no way you could, you know, you'd ever survive. And I really believe that's true. We see that year after year after year. There are so many variabilities, so many variables. We don't even know, you know, what our money is until into October or sometime. Is that right, Ron? Like they'll say you're getting this much, and everybody goes, wow, that's good or that's bad. And then October rolls around, and either we're getting more or we're getting less. And then the assessments come in. I mean, there's 100 things that are so, and then you have tax anticipation notes and interest, and it's an incredible way to have to run a school district, any kind of a business where there's this type of money. But I think we're making the right choice if that's the choice the board agrees to. Does anyone else like to say anything about this?
I have a quick question. Charlie, you had mentioned that Zimmerman has the budget information, budget flyer all set to go?
They have just about everything, and we're supposed to send them these final figures after whatever.
Okay, I mean, I know, I haven't seen it. It hasn't come in our package yet. Are we going to see it before it goes out to make comments?
We haven't done that before, but... I can email it to you when we finally get it, but, you know, there's a time rush on it. We should have had it done and out. It's just that we've been waiting on this at this point. But we can share that with the board.
I'd like to see it. I mean, we see the calendars, we see the other things. You know, why aren't we seeing the budget information going out?
Douglas,
Charlie, with the change, is there going to be any additional costs to making the flyers and stuff, or what would it be a significant cost to change the flyers?
It's on computer right now.
Okay.
Anyone to my left?
There's no additional
question. It's right now. It's all computerized. It's in the computer. Rob,
I have to agree with Dr. Murphy. I think it's great to give the additional money back to the community and bring it to a true zero. I mean, that's what we were hoping for months ago when we were talking about adopting the budget. I also think it's good to put that excess money into fund balance or reserve, because we don't know what the future is going to bring. And I'm reading a lot of the same stuff, some of the educational journals that I get, that there's a lot of uncertainty as to what's going to happen. So I have to agree, and I do support that.
Okay, folks, let's start with you, Rob. Are you for bringing this down to zero, putting 800 and some more thousand into it? Yes? Yes? Deborah? Yes? Fred? Mike? Tony?
Yes.
John? Good. Okay. Good. Anything else? Any visitors? Closing. Sal? Come on down.
Good evening. As I listened to today's dissertation just now on the complexities of the state aid that we receive, I just want to emphasize again, as I have in the past, how important it is to educate our future citizens rather than curse the darkness, as we've been doing so long, on the complexities of the state aid issue. Because people are voting tomorrow, next month, for a budget that they really can't ascertain just how much they're going to pay, because we have to wait until October to determine what that is. And I think there's got to be a better way for us to be able to determine what we're paying. I know, for example, when I fill out my state and income tax, I know what I'm going to pay. I pay a certain amount of what I earn, and at the end, that's my tax. But here, it's so nebulous because it's been created that way. And you, as local board members, I think have to take the responsibility of educating and inculcating as early as possible with the civics mindedness that we're talking about lately, and get these people to become astute in this particular area. I would venture to say, if you each look at your own local property tax and how much you're paying for the state, for the local school taxes, it comes to quite a bit of money, $10,000, $8,000, $7,000. That's a considerable amount of money. And when you think about the fact that in the last 50 years that I've been living in Brookhaven and in Sachem, because I've lived in the same house, I've seen how the taxes have increased, and the ratio has changed because our public has not voted. And it's simple to understand that when you don't vote locally, the state takes advantage of it, as they have, so that today we're now paying 58%, give or take a percentage, of the taxes. Is that correct? Am I off on that number, Dr. Murphy? Mr. Falco, you're familiar with that. You've been here a long time. And I think that it's important for us to educate our public so that we vote intelligently and maybe let the people in Albany say we won't put up with this thing where we have to borrow money during the time we get our money from Albany from June and on, and the result is that we pay interest on that money. This is ludicrous. It's almost like I'm living in a kind of a, you know, Lilliputian land. So I would strongly urge that. And as the chairman of the committee, we're trying to urge our people to vote this coming budget so that the people in Albany won't take the rug from under us for what they've done this year, and then next year we find ourselves on the other side of the issue. But thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sal. Future agenda items. Yes.
Are we going to have a discussion anytime soon regarding report cards?
Yeah, if there's a need for it, you have a concern about?
Well, report cards? I know we have it the new one is implemented to second grade right now.
Yes.
Yeah, are we going to now go another grade with the same report card?
Presently, we have a 3-5 report card committee established, and we are looking to hopefully have it in place for September. But I really won't know that until the end of the school year. They've been meeting on a regular basis, and they're looking to make similar changes like the K-2 report card. So we kind of have a foundation with the K-2, so we might be able to get it in place for September.
Is it possible then we could have a discussion when the administration is ready prior to,
sure,
you know,
sure,
before the end of the school year? We could have it on before it's implemented in September?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Is everybody okay with that?
We'll look for June.
Yeah, good. Okay. Good. That's good. Can we get it also, Charlie, can we get a report from the robotics team? I heard they did really well at Hofstra. Marianne is one of the judges, right, Marianne?
I put something in the board packet that they won the judges award.
So otherwise, we would get a new law firm. But
means, but I'll let Mr. Nolan.
Yeah, maybe we can get some kind of a report as to what they did, how they did. And Marianne, you were there. Do you want to say a few words?
What's the judges award mean, Marianne? Does that mean thanks for coming?
I didn't know I was making this presentation. I did mention it to Mr. Pomara because the judges did notice that the St. James students were not there for a couple of years because of budgetary cuts. But I serve as a judge. There are several volunteers who judge the competition. It's run by the School Business Partnerships of Long Island of Suffolk County. And there are different awards that are given over a 2-day period to all the, not to all the teams, to the teams that are selected for the award. The judges award that was given to your team was given for the team that overcame adversity based upon budget cuts, that they were able to come back, put their team back together as a group. It's like a little business, these teams. It's amazing. You really should have them in. And if they come in, invite me because I love watching them. But that was the reason that they were given the judges award. The judges were very impressed with the fact that they had been absent from the competition and were able to get a team together and have a robot that works so well. They built this robot over 6 weeks, very intense period. There are a lot of volunteers who dedicate their time. It's really a very wonderful program, and it opens up the door for your students to receive scholarships from colleges. The colleges do look at this is a very prestigious competition, and they did a great job.
Thank you.
We just so the audience knows that with the robotics,
well, it may be the same thing you were going to say, Dr. Murphy, that when we had some discussion earlier on about our technology course offerings, we did for next year offer a robotics course for the first time at the high school, and I'm happy to report that we have sufficient enrollment in both buildings that course will run. So I suspect
terrific.
As much as we are appreciative of the judges award, I think we'll do even better next year.
Yeah, we're going to be going after that Miller Place team. I know that.
Yeah. And, not for nothing, Marianne, for what we pay your law firm, we really expect to win next year. Even if they bring in a shoebox with wheels and a battery.
I actually did not judge the judges award.
Oh, then forget it.
One of the line items in the budget this year, it was actually increased in order to take care of this, the robotics needs for the future, and I know that Mr. Nolan I think had a chance to attend the meeting, but some of us were dealing with donuts that day. So, yeah.
Thank you. Anyone else have any suggestions? Douglas, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to know if it's possible, if Pearl could look into this. I'm familiar with one high school, and I'm told there are other high schools that have begun implementing this as part of their English course load. A mandatory class for ninth graders that deals with grammar, a whole year on grammar, and I know it sounds kind of stupid, but a lot of people my age are not very good with that, me being one of them. I know other high schools are doing this, and if you could just look into it and see with the department chairs and with the guidance people if it's something for the future that might be feasible for us, or if we even have a need at Sagem for something like this.
One thing I can say right off the bat is that for the past 2 years we've had two consultants working with our high school English departments revamping the entire curriculum, and one of the things they were looking at and have revised is what they call the GUM program, grammar, usage, and mechanics. So actually there is more grammar being taught now than really we've done in a few years. But at this point we're not running a separate course, but I think we can certainly look at it.
Is anyone else? Okay, before Rob, I'm sorry.
A couple of things, actually. I was approached by some PTA members regarding, and I didn't have the answer to them, so I said I would discuss it here with you to see if I get some answers for them. The school lunch program payment system that we have in place, okay, I was approached by some PTA members that indicated that it's very difficult for them to keep track of the amount of the money that's in their child's account. Do we have anything in place, or are we looking to put something in place maybe where a parent could add funds to a student's account or a child's account?
We have a system.
Through the email where they could determine what the account?
Through email, but I know they can call up and the school could actually tell you exactly what they've ordered for the entire year, you know, day by day.
But it's not something that they can get on a computer and see what's being purchased?
Security to get into our system would be a challenge.
Because I know there are some programs out there, e-lunch room, that allows parents to transfer money directly to their student, their child's account, so that they know that when they get to the school, they're not going to come up short on lunch money. Or the other end, one of the concerns that one of the PTA members had was the kids are taking money from the account and buying junk, buying cookies, and they have no idea, you know, as to what they're purchasing. Now, I know you can call. Maybe a lot of people aren't aware of that. But I know there are programs out there that allows a parent to monitor not only what the kid's eating, but also monitor how much, you know, what the money is left in the account.
I'll ask Nancy to report back on that. But you can call in at this point. They can tell you exactly what the children, if they have some concerns, just call food service. They'll bring it up and bring up their child's eating habits.
The other thing I want to discuss is that a couple of months earlier, Ms. Girosh talked about possibly, as part of her vision for elementary education, implementing a science curriculum for the elementary education. Me personally, I would like to hear a little bit more about that and see about possibly maybe running a pilot next year in one school or multiple schools to see how that would pan out and develop. I don't know how the rest of the board feels.
Okay, thank you.
The third thing, and I spoke to Dr. Murphy about this, and I know you promised to look into this, was the implementation possibly of a second-year leadership club, not so much a credit program, where a student can take what they've learned the first year and put it to good use through civic responsibility, volunteering out in the community, fundraising, tying that further into some of the issues that Mr. Nicosi has brought up with students possibly interning with local politicians, okay, and then last but not least, tying into some type of leadership scholarship, possibly maybe the Walter Dunham Scholarship, specifically for a student that completes the first year curriculum, leadership curriculum, and participates fully in a second year club, would be eligible for that scholarship. I know you told me you were going to speak to about Mr. Cobb.
It's on the high school principal's agenda for tomorrow afternoon.
Okay.
Okay. John, anything else? Anyone? Okay. Before we close the meeting, who's here? Kathy, Nancy, Denise, Mike, Ed, John, Gary, John in the back, John Alexek, and Jim Nolan to thank him, and Gary, thank you folks for being here tonight, and Ron, thank you for pitching it. Oh, and Ron, I'm sorry. How are you? Thank you. I hear you're doing a wonderful job at Cayuga. Thank you so much for being here, folks. Can I have a motion to adjourn, please? To executive session. That was John and Doug.